Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Pitt Mailbag Show from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with my fellow college beat writer, Abby Schnabel. We're here to talk all things Pitt here. Got some questions that you all have sent into us via email or Twitter, and we're going to get to them all here on today's episode. Lots of action in the transfer portal since our last show, where we've been doing a lot of speculation, and now we finally get some hard answers as to what's going on in football and basketball. So all of that will be addressed today. As always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. And they have amazing food and over 20 television screens. And not only that, you'll get to see us there. We will be there, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, doing our live NFL draft show from Mike's Beer Bar both Thursday and Friday nights for the first, second, and third rounds of the NFL draft. Join us there. If you can make it down, you can have a brew with myself, people like Jason Mackey, Paul Zeiss, Adam Bittner. We'll all be there hanging out, also doing our live show. And if you can't make it there because maybe you're not from Pittsburgh, maybe you're a little busy, you can watch it on the live stream right here on YouTube or on Facebook Live. We'll have all those options available to you there. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today. But let's get into some college questions. I'm joined again by Abby. Abby, how you doing?
Chris, it was a busy week this past week, mostly for you, a little less for me since I don't do a ton of the transfer portal stuff. But I know we were texting back and forth just, oh my God, there's another one, because both the basketball team, like you mentioned, and the football team were busy in the past week, which gives us tons to talk about today, which is always exciting.
Absolutely. There's so much to discuss right now. Let's go over what we've got here questions wise that have been submitted in. And, we had some big news last week just as far as how things played out. And that was involving Pitt's players. They were losing in the transfer portal. Ted asked, what caused Deion Hayes and Solomon DeShields to want to leave? Is it more about coaching issues or just personal reasons? Also got to add Antonio Kamen, a redshirt freshman defensive end who had two sacks in the spring game. He also entered the transfer portal along with Christian Veyer, who that was more expected because he was kind of the odd man out of the quarterback room. But the three defensive players leaving was not as expected. Deion Hayes was a fifth-year senior for Pitt. He has now since committed to Colorado, joining Deion Sanders. That's a big story considering the public feuding that Pat Narduzzi and Deion Sanders had last year. But he heads to Colorado. I believe Solomon DeShields has not announced a commitment yet as of yet to our recording this.
He has? To A&M.
He texted A&M, so I missed that while I've been trying to keep up with the draft and everything else. But so two major programs scoop up two significant starters for Pitt. And if you didn't read the story, I did ask Deion Hayes in his Twitter DMs. I was like, hey, man, like, you know, what was behind this? And he openly admitted, he's like, hey, I don't think we can win right now. He said, I don't think they're going to win games. But I got the impression from that he was talking about competing for a championship, competing on a major stage, getting to back to a conference championship game. And Colorado's a program with Deion Sanders, though they went 4-8 last year. There's some people who project that maybe they're going to take another rise up this year with the investments and the improvements that they're trying to make, and that maybe Deion Hayes can be a part of that step up. Solomon DeShields, we didn't get any official words on why he left, but everything in the reporting that I was able to put there for the Post-Gazette, Abby, was suggesting like, hey, like, you know, there was rumblings that there's not, that Deion didn't have confidence in the offense, and not to assume that for Solomon DeShields, but when you see multiple starting defenders, and these are both guys raised by this program, recruited by this program, developed by this program into starters, they're four-year guys, they looked like they were loyal to Pitt, they both turned down. I know for a fact that they both turned down earlier opportunities to stick with the program for them to leave now. That does cause some question there. But to me, Abby, I think it's just more so like, look, there's an acknowledgement that like, hey, this Pitt Panthers team right now, it's in a rebuilding mode. And if you are one of the, if you're in your final year of eligibility, which both those guys would have been, you being on a rebuilding team doesn't exactly put you in the best spot to show that you're an NFL draft guy at all times. And that can kind of lead to what decisions happen here. I think that's what happened with these guys.
I also think a little bit has to do with, you know, Charlie Partridge leaving. You know, you mentioned all those people being both those guys being developed through this program. Charlie Partridge is a guy whose thumbprint is on this defense forever, arguably, or at least Walton Narduzzi's there. Yeah. And he's a guy that developed these guys into what they are. And while it obviously wasn't like him leaving was a huge story, it really wasn't that talked about how it impacts these guys, because we didn't see a lot of movement, at least. But now we're seeing that. And I think some of this fallout absolutely has to do with they've gone through a spring. They see what pieces they have now. But at the same time, when you've been rocking with a guy like Charlie Partridge for so long and he leaves, I think that absolutely has to do with some of the decision going in here.
Absolutely. And part of it, you know, they got Tim Doust to, you know, to bring in, and some good things were said about Tim Doust, but Charlie Partridge was known as the best defensive line coach in the country. You know, for four straight years, Pitt's defense finished in the top three in sacks in the country. And in part of that process were guys that were going early in the draft, whether it was Patrick Jones, Rashad Weaver, Kalijah Kansi was a first round pick just last year. That's a lot of things to live up to. And when, you know, you look at last year after Kalijah Kansi left, you know, Deion Hayes only got four sacks, and, you know, and then you look at the other guys, there weren't too many other, like, you know, there were some guys that you're hoping could be up and comers. Sean Fitzsimmons, I think, is a hopeful guy this year. There's other guys looking to step up. Nakai Johnson switched to defensive tackle, and there's other guys hoping to make some moves. But, you know, I can kind of get it if Deion Hayes is like, look, before, you know, his first 3 years with the program in 2020, they rebounded and they finished strong. 2021, they won the ACC championship. 2022, they had a 9-win season and won a Sun Bowl game. And then last year, 3-9. You know, that's a steep fall off from the trajectory that he was seeing there. And so I kind of get it. I don't think it's anything against the guys like Deion Hayes and Solomon DeShields. They're doing what they're trying to do to make it to the NFL. That's what everyone's trying to make right now. And also, you know, we don't know officially, but, you know, one of my sources indicated that Deion Hayes was one of the highest paid NIL players, and they renegotiated that recently to try to keep him on the team. He was one of the most paid players to keep him on the team. And for him to turn that down to go somewhere else means that he's probably getting a better offer from what turns out to be Colorado. I think it's just a very interesting situation to be in. I don't think it's a hard feelings thing. I think it's very much just like, hey, business is business. And college football right now, it's a lot more of a business than it's ever been before.
Which I think leads us to our next question, too, just talking about NIL, and I'm waiting for Chris to pull it up so I can read it. Brandon asked, what's to stop any program from picking off developed players with NIL offers that Pitt can't match? I've seen coaches call it the Wild West. I've seen a lot of other things. There's a lot of lack of regulation within NIL right now, which is causing some coaches who aren't sticking with it, who aren't developing with the times and adjusting to this rapidly changing business of football, that are getting a little bit upset about the lack of regulation. There are also coaches that are taking pure advantage of it.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I think you mentioned this before we recorded, when you look at, I'm going to steal it. Sorry, Chris. When you look at Jeff Capel and Pat Narduzzi, is Jeff Capel has really adapted to this and has done his best to make sure he's getting money for his guys to keep them. We talked a lot about that a couple weeks ago, about what is the dollar sign amount for guys like Jalen Lowe and Ish Leggett, but then also making sure he's getting talented players. I don't know if we can say the same about a guy like Pat Narduzzi and if he's taking full advantage of all of the NIL stuff, which may be a hindrance to this program. And especially when you're a guy like Deion Hayes, who knows he's a hot commodity and can get more money out of a different program, what's to stop you from leaving? And so there really is nothing until there is more regulation, if there ever is more regulation. And it's kind of just crazy how you can, with a lot of them having agents, that players can't directly talk to the program, but the agent can talk to the program, which leads a lot of potential, you know, tampering conversations going on. But at the same time, there's just nothing stopping anything at this point.
Absolutely. And that's the thing here is that, to answer Brandon's question here, who asked this, there's nothing. Like Abby just said, it's literally just, it's college sports right now. If you got money to pay players, you can pay players. You know, and I don't say, of course, not the program, the NIL collectives and all that, but let's be real. This is what this is about now. It is a buying scheme, and something that a colleague of mine, Shelby Cassesi for Channel 11, said on the final word that I was on with her on Sunday night. You know, she brought up in her final word was bringing up that like the top 20 teams, the top 20 richest teams, they're just getting richer and richer. They're just the gap is widening between these teams. And if you don't want this to become basically even more so of a top heavy sport in college football, especially, you got to find ways to regulate this. And listen, I agree with you entirely, because, well, I mean, like you said, I kind of was telling you, this is my point. Jeff Capel has said numerous times how he's like, hey, I certainly miss the days of yesteryear where you could yell at a player and there was nothing they could do about it, and you could, and they just had to stew on it, and they helped them grow, and it made for poor personal growth, and you didn't have to worry about recruiting to keep your own guys every single season. But he said, but that's not the times. We have to adjust to that. And I think now Pitt basketball is doing that, and I certainly think that you could say they're on an upward trajectory. They've had 20 plus wins in back-to-back seasons for the first time since the good years of the Jamie Dixon era. But Pat Narduzzi, whereas you could say he's had more success than Jeff Capel. He's won an ACC championship. He's won a bowl game. You know, he's brought that to Pitt, but he also inherited a much better situation than Jeff Capel did. You know, he didn't have a Kevin Stallings situation going on there. But Pat Narduzzi right now, especially after this last season, the trajectory is in question as far as where things are going. And I think Pitt, because they were able to do so well in 2021 and 2022, it kind of was put in a position where, hey, maybe the Panthers, the way they're doing it with Alliance 412 and the collective, maybe it's working. Maybe they're cooking. Maybe the loyalty that's built through this program is working. And we see through one year of losing, you know, there are people that want to jump ship. But again, I know there's Pitt fans that are like, oh, why us? It's so bad to be a Pitt fan. This is what happens to all the programs when they're losing. And you're even starting to see some programs that when they just lose a coach, you can see this in basketball. Look at what's happened in Kentucky. When Kentucky is a blue blood of basketball, they've been a blue blood, but Calipari's gone. Guess what? Players are going to be flying everywhere. You're going to have to completely rebuild your team. And yes, Kentucky has a lot more money to do that NIL-wise than Pitt does in football or so. But this is part of what happens when you don't have success and there's reasons to leave your program, and especially when you don't have a giant NIL base that can compete with programs like Texas A&M that literally buy off coaches for $70 million just to hire another one for $80 million. That's how crazy the money is being spent in this sport. And to answer Brandon's question, there is nothing to stop that until the NCAA or somebody steps in and says, hey, we're going to regulate this somehow and make it so there's more of an even playing field for the smaller programs.
Yeah, and I think what's crazy too is it's not even necessarily just lack of success. It's lack of a certain success. Like you mentioned, Deion Hayes didn't feel like they could compete nationally. I look at a program like Wisconsin, who just lost arguably their two best players to the transfer portal because they lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament, which some programs, that's like insane feat to get to the NCAA tournament. And Wisconsin hasn't had success the past couple of years. So guys like A.G. Storr, Chucky Hepburn, leave. I don't have a good, more contemporary or a more ACC focused example for you, but it's just like, that's just what we're seeing. It's becoming more of a, unfortunately, a pay for play model, which I don't necessarily think is the way we all want to go. I mean, because even in pro sports, there's regulation, there's contracts, there's things going on. And so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, if there is one that should come up. But, you know, as long as it is how it is, you're going to see even the best players from the best teams leaving.
Absolutely. That's going to be certainly a big question there. Let's get to Devin's question, which is how Pat Narduzzi should really respond to this. Devin asks, what should Pat Narduzzi's priority in the transfer portal be? And that's a good question, Devin. You know, Abby, you and I talked about this earlier. Did you have any ideas?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to target defensive end right now just because there's a lack of senior leadership in a way, lack of veteran presence. Sure, you've got a transfer in Nate Matlack from Kansas State there, but he's not familiar with the Pitt system yet. Nate Temple's out with an injury, and you just lost Deion Hayes. And so really the only other people you have are Sincere Edwards and Jimmy Scott. And I don't know, if I'm Pitt, I want someone a little bit more battle-tested, and a phrase we like to use on this podcast. I want someone who has a little bit more experience, just because you don't know what you're going to get at that position now. You thought you had a gold star there. Write it in Sharpie. I'm sure they felt like they had that coming into this year, and now it's more of a, we're writing in pencil trying to figure out who do we want and where do we want them. And I just think that's a position that Pitt has had so much success with in the past, and not finding someone to really take it over and be a star there is a little nerve-wracking.
Absolutely. And I'm right with you. Defensive end is a priority right now, particularly because even beyond the pass rushing aspect of it, you know, Deion Hayes had just 4 sacks last season. It's not like they're losing a guy that, you know, had 10 plays. It's not like they're losing Patrick Jones in his prime or Rashad Weaver. And that's not to say Deion Hayes wasn't a good player and won't be a good player for Colorado. I think he will be. But point being, like, they needed somebody, anybody, to be an established presence at defensive end, even beyond the pass rushing side of it. It's also the run stopping side of it. Deion Hayes was very good at turning runs back to the inside, and that's where I think that they could really need someone to step up. Nate Matlack could fill that role, but they're going to need somebody else to step up there, whether it's Jimmy Scott, who I think has shown some promise, but Jimmy Scott was supposed to be the guy that was going to be behind the starters who would grow into that role this year so he could be that guy next season. Two seasons from now, but not this year having to be the starter. And so right now, I think that should be a priority for Pat Narduzzi in the transfer portal. Find somebody who can be a stalwart defensive end, who can be strong in the system, be aggressive, and at least give you something to work with as you keep developing your defensive line. And I also say this, I think Pitt has a strong future of its defensive line with some of the guys on it. Isaiah Neal, Sean Fitzsimmons, even other guys that aren't being talked about as much, like Thomas Aiden. I think that there's a good rotation of guys behind them. Bam Brim is still there, and he's been more defensive tackle. Nekai Johnson switched there. Elliot Donald's going to be on the inside. The inside has a lot of presence, and I think we'll have a strong rotation. It's the outside, the edge guys on defensive end that I think are going to have the biggest questions moving forward, and that could be a major issue. So if there's one position in particular that Pat Narduzzi needs to hit on in the portal, it is defensive end. I'm right with you. I think that, you know, when you look across the board, you know, I'd wonder, you know, I don't know about how strong the run game actually is, because the offensive line in the blue gold game was just so beat up. 3 starters were missing. I think it was Terrence Moore. I'm blanking on names right now, but Terrence Moore, Branson Taylor, and the guy who was hurt last year. Why am I blanking on his name right now? But there's another starter from last year who was missing for that game. And that's 3 guys off the offensive line, and they just got chewed up by Pitt's defensive front, which, even though, you know, Pitt's defensive front is looking to prove a lot this year. They had a complete advantage. Also, Ryan Jacoby, that was the name I couldn't pull out of my head. But, you know, those are older guys who could have set tones for the offensive line that weren't able to. So I'm not so sure if Pitt desperately needs offensive linemen, but you know what? They might need it anyway, because, you know, all those guys that we're talking about there, none of them were like, you know, major draft, you know, NFL draft watch guys. Like Matt Gonsalves going into last season was like, that guy's going to be in the NFL very soon. And not to say that none of the guys on the offensive line will be, but no one is being talked about the way that Gonsalves was talked about, the way that Carter Warren was talked about the year before that. And that is where I think I'd have a lot of concern about Pitt's offensive line, and maybe even its running back room, where Rodney Hammond, you know, didn't play much, but you need something to get going in this run game, as well as the pass game, and, you know, what's going on with Nate Yarnell and Cade Bell and all that. But you need better offensive line play, and you need a run game. And those, if I'm not looking at defensive end, that's also where I'm putting my time if I'm Pat Narduzzi.
You summed it up. I don't even have more to add. Lead us to our next question, which is also talking the transfer portal, but on the basketball end of things, where I can ramble on forever. Tanner asks, did Jeff Capel score big with Cam Corin and Damian Dunn? What should Pitt basketball do next? I think Pitt got its guys. I don't know what the definition of score big is. I don't necessarily think either of these guys were hugely highly touted players, but I think these are the guys that Jeff Capel wanted, and he got them. And I think that's in this market, as we've discussed today, that's huge. And I think, you know, he addressed his big problem area in that they didn't have a center who could finish. Cam Corin can really finish at the rim. And then you've got another guard in the mix that is able to, he's more of a two, but I've seen a little bit of his film. I'm not usually a film watcher, but I was watching him. He can run the point a little bit. And that's just a good veteran presence to have on this team. Because again, we're looking at still a fairly young team in the grand scheme of things. So I'll pass it over to Chris before we answer the second part of the question. But Jeff Capel got his guys, and I think that's the gist of it with Cam Corin and Damian Dunn.
Cam Corin certainly, I think, was that dude. And you and I talked about the priority was get a center. Get a center who could score, who could work inside, who could be a good athlete. Corin is all of that. And again, battle tested. And Corin is very much battle tested with Florida State, not just a D1, but in the ACC. Pitt literally faced him. And I think that's a really good sign of what he can bring. And again, Corin's not going to be the star of your team, but you know what he's going to be? He's going to be a useful player who can get some occasional points, who can be a good role-playing center, which they didn't even have last season because Fede Federico just couldn't do anything offensively. Defensively, rebounding, you know, solid and all that. But Cam Corin can do that and bring the offense. That's where the balance is there. Damian Dunn, like you said, Damian Dunn isn't going to be a starter on this Pitt basketball team, at least I don't think, unless something crazy happens. But Damian Dunn's going to bring experience. He played for 4 years at Temple. He was a bench player for Houston, one of the best teams in the country last year. And he was a decent mid-range scorer. He's a guy that could create his own shot, drive, use his size. He's 6'5". But I think it's that 6'5" size that really helps him out, and it's going to help Pitt out, is the fact that he's a guy who can go out there and now you could tell him to guard a taller guard. You could tell him, hey, you know what? This lineup's a little bit bigger. We need you to take on the small forward in this lineup because they're 6'6", and he has that length to help. And that length also helps cut off passing lanes. It lets you not be bullied as much. That's where I think that you could get a lot of use out of Damian Dunn, is especially on defense. And hey, Pitt's had the last two ACC sixth men of the year. It'd be crazy if they had a third straight one, and Damian Dunn, at least coming from Houston, could be a guy that could be in the early mix of that conversation to be that. But to your point, what should they do next? Now that they've gotten two of the needs that we've talked about go for the past month or so.
I think you want a guy that resembles one of Blake Hinson's many amazing qualities for your, they have two scholarship spots open. So in theory, you could fill both of these, but I think you want a sharpshooter or a more of a four-man or someone that fits both like Blake Hinson did. But I definitely think you want a sharpshooter here at this point. You know, you have guys that can shoot, but you don't have the guy that can shoot. And I feel like in today's basketball world, you really want a guy, at least a guy. You want more, absolutely. But like we saw with Blake Hinson this past year, when things weren't going well, they got him the ball. I mean, how many threes did he hit at Duke? I don't remember the exact number. I think it was like 12 or something like that. Maybe not 12. That seems a lot, but I could be wrong there. Either way, a lot of threes, and you had a sharpshooter in him. And even looking back at previous years, you had guys like Greg Elliott or Nelly Cummings coming in and hitting those threes. And while we've seen these guys be able to hit threes, none of these guys is it really their bread and butter to come in and hit a deep three or to make an insane shot. We've seen them do it, but that's not what any of these guys are per se. I also think that a good add would be getting someone who's a little bit more of a true four man, just because right now, like, yeah, I could see the Diaz-Graham twins kind of filling that role, playing a little bit less of the five and more of the four. I still think you want someone who's a little bit more sturdy in that. Maybe they can shoot. Hopefully they can shoot. Maybe not as well as Blake Hinson, but I think you've addressed your big problem areas if you're Jeff Capel. Now it's kind of you get to have some fun with it and pick and choose who you think is going to add the most to your roster.
I think this team desperately needs a sharpshooter. I think you talked about one of the best assets that Blake Hinson had, 110 three-pointers. That's not, you're not going to replace that. But if you can get a guy who maybe shot 40% somewhere as a guard or even a wing, I think the two things they need to address now is they need just a straight-up wing who could play small forward slash maybe flex to a four, but can be athletic, run the floor, and give you some sort of offensive production, whether that's driving to the hoop or hitting the three-pointer. If you get the three-pointer, great. You basically have, you know, a person with, if you can get a person with Blake Hinson's size that can shoot three-pointer, amazing. You've basically, you know, replaced that in your lineup. You know, not saying that they will replace Blake Hinson, but, you know, that, I mean, we're talking about length, size, and skill sets there. But I doubt that you get both in the same person. So for that sake, let's say they get a defensive wing, kind of like a Will Jefferis type, mm-hmm. who can score a little bit more than Will Jefferis, and then you get a sharpshooter, a guy like Greg Elliott, you know, who in the last scene, that would be a great combination, because now you're saying, hey, you have a better center, you have Papa Conte who maybe overtakes that Cam Corhan, you know, at some point this year. You have Zach Austin who can still be your athletic guy and run the floor, but now you have another wing that can work with Zach Austin and rotate. You have the Diaz Graham twins, you know, who can, one of them can play the four and kind of play more of a three at times. And then if you have Leggett and Lowe as your primary guards, that gives you a lot of flexibility between those positions, between the fours that you have there. And if you have Damian Dunn who can come on and kind of give you a mid-range game and some extra defense, then I think the perfect fit is just a guy, his job is to knock down three-pointers. When he's on the court, he spaces out the floor because he's just going to wait beyond the perimeter. And if the team, if you got good ball movement, which we know that Ishmael Leggett and Jalen Lowe can create, and it creates problems, and you have a center that people have to respect, it's going to force some spacing issues and force teams, all right, do we have to guard Lowe on the drive? Do we have to go to Leggett on the drive? Lowe might hit the three. Oh, wait, we got to worry about this Cam Corhan guy. Oh, man, Guillermo Diaz-Graham can hit the three. Wait a minute, there's this other guy over here that's hit the three, yeah. too? That's where I think that Jeff Capel needs to hit right now, is if he gets a sharpshooter. I think a sharpshooter before the wing. If he gets the sharpshooter, great. If he gets another wing, that's awesome. But I think that's going to be what you call it, icing on the cake at this point. I think that the cake itself has been Cam Corhan and getting a Damian Dunn. Now, I think that you can get some really – I'm running out of cake metaphor here.
Candles on the cake.
But you can't eat the candles. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
okay, maybe, we're making the pretty flowers on the cake.
There we go. Yeah, some flowers on the cake. That's going to be your sharpshooter. And then maybe some, like, sprinkles is going to be the extra wing guy. That's – look at me. I'm running out of metaphors here in the cake. But point being, those are the two things I think Pitt basketball needs, Tanner, which is why I think that's what's going to come next. And who knows? Maybe they want another facilitator in the mix as well. But I think if they get those two things, this roster is ready to go, and I'd be very excited to see them. Heck, Joe Lunardi, who was not feeling Pitt all last year in his early you know, March Madness bracketology thing for next season, he already put Pitt as a 10 seed in his early preseason bracketology. So there might be some hype around Pitt, Abby.
I think what's cool is that I think Jeff Capel has all the pieces he needs. And like you said, now everything else is just adding another layer, adding another tier to the cake, or adding some pink frosting instead of just the white stuff. You know, it's just adding more. I feel like the pieces that he has now, this is a team that can go out and really win games. I really, truly believe that. But I also think Jeff Capel's the kind of guy that's not going to be complacent and knows he has two scholarship spots. And then suddenly there's five shooting threats on the floor, which I don't think is something we've seen from Pitt this last year. I don't think there was ever really a time where you were worried about all five guys on the floor. And I think Jeff Capel has the chance to really have a team that has five and more threats
lineup. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
But I agree, because in today's basketball world, you want shooting. You want that on your side. And I think that's where you're going to see some moves there. So I think it's a great way to wrap the show there, is talking about Pitt basketball, whereas Pitt football has a lot more questions than Pitt basketball on their side right now. Pitt basketball, I think, has found some answers, and there's still some questions there, but I think that Pitt fans can be a little bit more excited about where the basketball team is right now in their stage of the offseason. But who knows? We'll see some moves from Pitt football. Of course, they've also also gotten some other commits. We'll do that on the Friday's recruitment report this week, where hopefully I find some time to breathe in between now and the NFL draft. But Abby, thanks so much for joining us here on the Pitt Mailbag Show. Thank you all for joining us here on YouTube or on your favorite podcasting apps. Remember, read all of our work, post-gazette.com, to get all of our Pitt coverage. Abby has some great volleyball stuff coming your way that you need to check out right now. Go to post-gazette.com. Find this show. We're on every Tuesday for the Pitt Mailbag Show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of your daily coverage from all the Pitt angles, Pittsburgh sports. We're also back Wednesday on the North Shore Drive podcast, previewing the draft. And another reminder, we do have a live draft show that will be covering the NFL draft and who the Steelers select specifically in the first, second, and third rounds Thursday and Friday. Mike's Beer Bar. Get there in the evening. We'll be set up live streaming. You can interact with us, drink beer with us, whatever you want to do. I won't be able to drink beer too early, but eventually in the evening, drafts are some long nights. Chris will partake in a brew or two. So we hope to see you there at Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar of Pittsburgh. We'll see you again here soon on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and all of our podcasting channels. Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.